Get snacking and get cracking with a snack that packs a protein punch. Pistachios are known for their protein power, fiber, and better-for-you unsaturated fats for a combination that may help you keep feeling fuller longer. Wonderful Pistachios is a good source of protein with zero guilt. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. I love that they come in a variety of sizes and flavors, making this the perfect protein snack for any on-the-go adventure. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Welcome back to the Flow Track Podcast, episode number, I have no clue, coming up on 500 episodes, I know that, but it is day four. USA's is in the books. We officially have our teams. Now, they're going to announce the official teams like a week from now, but we know who finished top three. We know who has the standard. We know we'll be representing America in America back here 3 weeks from now. I'm going to go home, back to Texas tomorrow, wait 3 weeks, and then come right back here. I won't be in this spot, but I'll be somewhere else. But it's going to be a fun 10-day meet. Can't wait to come back here. This is my first time in Eugene, so I'm excited to come. That's a lie. It's not my first time in Eugene. It's my first time at the new Hayward Field, and then I'll be coming back in a few weeks. Now, I'm trying to kill time because my colleague Kevin decided to show up to the podcast just 2 minutes late, but it's perfect timing. Kevin, welcome. I haven't talked about anything. People are filing into the chat. I haven't mentioned any race. I don't even know what order of breakdown we're going to do, but we're going to touch everything that happened today.
It was a lot.
It's going to be a great podcast.
It was a lot. Do you know how much track there was?
How much track?
There was so much track that my brain has been scrambled. I have no idea where I left my bike. My bike to the stadium this morning, and I know I put it in a different spot than I had the other days. But I can't for the life of me figure it out. I'm trying to go back in time, 4 or 5 hours ago? And I can't because so much happened between now and then. But I'll figure it out by the end of the pod. You know where my bike is? Put it in the chat.
Put the geolocation of your bike in the chat. Kevin.
Yeah.
First of all, before we get into any races, what was your thought on the meet as a whole?
Meet as a whole, I thought headline, obviously, Sydney McLaughlin, world record. I think the men's 100 was a highlight. Little bit more chalk than I thought. I thought there was a possibility of things going more on the upset side of things in certain races. The bye obviously impacted a lot of races out there. And then when you learn certain athletes are injured or banged up and stuff, you put their performance in context.
But yeah.
All in all, I mean, I think if you're talking about Team USA, like sending obviously usually that's pretty usual. A very strong team to the World
very
Championships.
Very good team.
Yeah. What about you?
There was some unique storylines, obviously, the Sha'Carri Richardson show with everyone thinking, including myself, that she would at least make the 100-meter team. She did not do any interviews, but then at the very end of the meet, she gave a quick 30-second statement to the media, essentially saying that we are disrespecting the athletes by interviewing them. It's kind of ironic because literally every other athlete got interviewed and got to tell their stories, got to talk about their failures and their successes. But for Sha'Carri, it was a different perspective, I'll say, lightly. Yeah. But what were your thoughts? Well, let's get through this now.
No, let's do it at the end.
We'll talk about it at the end.
I know people ask about the attendance a lot. Our final attendance numbers, Thursday, 2751, Friday, 3314, Saturday, 3664, and then today, 3577. It's interesting. It looked like it was way more full today than it was on Thursday. I mean, just from the couple of times we popped in.
Yeah.
So have it only be 800 more people today than Thursday is interesting. But I know people were running about
that. All
right,
let's talk about the races. We're going to start from, should we do in reverse order again?
Yeah, let's do that. Even though the men's high hurdles, you saw my face after the men's high hurdles.
You were annoyed.
I was bummed.
Okay, so let's start with the men's high hurdles. Grant Holloway decides to DNS. You asked him in an interview.
I did.
If he's running all three races, he said, what, do you want to break some news? And then he said, yes, I'm running all three.
Mm-hmm.
He was lying straight to your face. He knew he wasn't going to run the third race. He lied to you. But it's okay. Grant Holloway's allowed to lie to us because
100% approval rating.
He's a world champion.
Yeah.
What, I mean, it was kind of a bummer not seeing him in that race. I think it would have been a very different result, potentially,
if
Grant was in that race.
Yes, because I asked Daniel Roberts, who pulled a massive upset, to win this race, not just to qualify, but to win this race. And I said, were you bummed Grant was in the race? He said, no, because it actually helped him. Because if you have someone right next to you, get off to the start that Grant gets off to, sometimes that can throw your own rhythm off a little bit. Yeah. I thought it was, I mean, great answer from Roberts to be that forthright. And, you know, you expect him to be like, yeah, of course, I want everybody in there. But Grant, he didn't really matter in the outcome because he's going regardless whether or not he's first or eighth. So he would basically just serve as either this rabbit or this distraction or whatever it could be. So I understand somebody who's not in that, not directly impacted by it, saying, hey, probably better if they're not there. It helps me focus on my race. I mean, what a performance for him.
Yeah.
Daniel Roberts, I mean, look at his results this year. He said he never lost faith. Remember 2019, made the world team and ran really well at NCAAs that year. His PR is from that year, 13 flat from the race at NCAAs. It's still 13 flat, wants to break 13 seconds. Behind him, Trey Cunningham, 13.08, and then Devin Allen
zooming
on this team by point. Was that
Cole,
zero?
Zoom in on zero, the third and fourth place finish, so you can see the exact time difference between third and fourth. 0.003.
Yeah.
So 13.087 and 13.090. If Devin Allen did not make this team,
that would have been an upset.
That would have been shocking.
That would have been a stunner. Yeah. And afterwards, he said, you know, just got to advance, got to get through all that stuff, which is true because it's cliche. Hard team to make, hardest team to make on the U.S.
I feel like
side.
We're saying that with every event now.
But this one was really hard.
The women's 800's hard to make. The women's hurdles are hard to make. The women's...
Just in general, the trials process, sometimes you can barely squeak through and then go on to win a medal or go win a gold medal. We saw it even with NCAA performances. People get sixth at NCAAs and they come here and win. So the margin's so small, just get through and then maybe, you know what I mean? Your luck turns the other way when Worlds comes around.
Does Daniel Roberts 13.03 put him in the conversation in your mind, or is it still two dog race?
We're adding people as the season goes on. We're like adding Trey Cunningham. We're adding Daniel Roberts. Yeah. I mean,
Parchment's still a thing.
Yeah. Parchment in the mix. But U.S. is sending a real. The fact that Roberts won this just strengthens the U.S. team as a whole because now you have an argument for all four guys to get on the medal podium. So U.S., if you're tracking the medal count, this is one where they should try to run up the score because they have a possibility of a lot of medals. I mean, having Roberts there is just such a huge, huge bonus. Women's 200?
No, what are we going to do? Let's go back and forth between distance and sprint, kind of spread it out throughout the pod. Okay, so we'll do a sprint event. Now we'll do a distance event.
You're going to be able to keep track of all
that? Yeah, so we're going to start. We'll go at the top. We'll do the men's 5K.
Actually, women's
5K. Women's 5K. Women's 5K.
Women's 5K. Started slow, continued to be slow, very, very tactical. Four broke away. The three who made the team, Cranny, Schweizer, and Enfeld, and then Wayne Kaladi. And eventually, the three in front broke away from Wayne Kaladi. Always in the mix. So disappointed to see her fall just a little bit short. But for Enfeld, redemption, total redemption. Just missed the team in the 10,000 a few weeks ago. Lost out on that kick to Natasha Rogers. Schweizer pulls off the double, almost triple situation here.
First, fourth, and second
in
these three events.
And then Cranny's back. She said that 10K earlier in the year took a lot out of her. She said if the 10K and 5K happened back when the 10K happened, she would have run, but it would have been real, real tough. So made a strategic decision, skip that race, run this one. And it paid off. Not too surprising. I mean, I think we had Enfeld as a sleeper, and then both you and I think had you didn't have Cranny. I did.
No.
But Schweizer and Cranny.
I think I had Josette Norris.
Yes, who finished. It was hot out there, too.
Yeah, it was hot.
Josette Norris finished in, 12th place. So, Tui finished 13th. And then St. Pierre finished 20th. Once the break happened, it was just very hard for anybody to keep going because the pace just went from 76, like 72, into the 60s, like super, super quick.
So that's men's, what's women's 5K? Wendy Kaladi, are you going to pick her again next year?
I'm
going to keep picking her until she makes the team. I do suggest going on to the website and watch the Wendy Kaladi interview. She, in the beginning part, she breaks down the race and how she felt. But then at the end, she gets kind of emotional because she mentions that she's going to be able to see her family for the first time in 9 years. For those who don't know, she's a refugee from Eritrea, and she hasn't seen them in so long. And the fact that this might happen for her is pretty cool. I think she would rather have that than make any team. So she's still there. She's still confident. She says she's got to keep grinding on to the next one, and eventually she'll break through. And I think she will. And you'll keep picking her.
I'm going to keep picking her. Roads, track, it doesn't matter.
Just keep picking her.
Cross country, I'm picking Kalati. Do you want to do men's five or do you want to go back to the sprints?
Let's go back to the sprints. Women's 200?
Women's 200. Steiner gets it done.
Woo!
21.77. Tamara Clark, 21.92. Jenna Prandini, 22.01. Obviously, probably not the top three everybody had, although somewhat familiar names. Let's start first with Steiner. Set herself up with a really fast semi earlier in the day.
Yeah, she ran 21.8, and I saw a little conversation with her and her coach. She said she shut it down with 10 meters to go.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew that she still had another gear to go towards in that final. She got there not that much faster, still 21.77. It is a quick turnaround, though. Back-to-back 200s is hard to do. And world lead now. She's now run the world lead multiple times this season. I asked her if she's excited to race the Jamaicans. She said, hell yeah. Maybe not. Oh, hell yeah, but like, yes. Maybe add the word hell.
Yeah, don't do that.
I don't know. She said yes. She smiled and was like excited to go up against the big three of Jamaica in Elaine Thompson-Herah, Sharika Jackson, and Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce, if Shelly-Ann makes the team. We don't know. That team will be decided after this podcast goes live, because that's later tonight. But what do you think, Steiner? Now, she's passed every test, right?
Yeah.
The only test she didn't pass was SECs, but looking back on it, you were like, clearly, that was the outlier.
Mm-hmm.
And now that she's going to go into Worlds as potentially the world leader with multiple sub-22s on her belt, under her belt, on her belt, under the belt.
Under your belt.
Under your belt.
Yeah.
What do you think? Is she the favorite? No. Is she silver medal favorite?
I don't have each medal. I don't have
she's
got to
be a favorite in one of the medals.
Yeah, I think she's I don't know. I mean, Jackson, Thompson, Ron, Fraser Price make a pretty mean team.
But 21.7 is not.
Say it again. Jackson, Fraser Price, and Tom's trying to make it really. If they're all running to their capability and they all decide to run the event, which is a big if, I think her chance of getting a medal, I think, are 50-50 at this point.
Okay.
Just because that 200 always does have some mystery attached to it. But she's had a long season.
That's true.
Don't take for granted what she's already done and how much racing she's done. Obviously this is a great race for her.
Tamara Clark making the team.
Yeah. Credit to her. 21.92. Just, you know, was fifth, I believe, in the 100 and then missed the team last year. She gets it done here. She's a training partner with Gabby Thomas. Gabby Thomas hurt grade 2 hamstring issue, and she gave it her best. She made it all the way into the final, which is remarkable when you consider how little she was training and sprinting. And I give her a ton of credit, by the way, for stopping and talking to us afterwards. Kind of, she just expressed her disappointment. And this is why, you know, this is track and field, and this is sports, right? Like the highs and the lows, all of it captured there. And, you know, you could see just how much she wanted to make the team, how much she wanted to go and fight for a medal. I just give her a ton of credit for doing that. And her coach said, if it was a week later, would be in a much better spot. And she said the same thing. It's timing, man. It's unfortunate that she wasn't healthy.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because that's exciting, because that means she can be a factor in the post-world season with, you know, all the Diamond Leagues August and September. And that's what we want. We want Gabby to be full mode, right? Mm-hmm. To then force Abby to also be going to full mode and then throw in, you know, whoever else can be on that day, like Jenna Prandini. I mean, if Sha'Carri ever figures out the 200, throw her in the mix.
Yeah.
The women's 200, Brittany Brown, who didn't have that great of a USA's, can become great, you know. And
there's a lot of Diamond Leagues post World Champs this year, because World Champs is so easy.
So early.
Prandini, man, had a great run. Like for a while, I'm like, is she gonna get this win? 22.01 for her. Steiner was too tough over that last 50, but Prandini was flying off that curve. It was an exciting race.
Prandini making the team was cool. She's kind of slept on a lot. I mean, she was...
I did have her as a sleeper in the 100.
Yeah.
But I don't think I picked her in the 200.
So. I don't think I picked her in the 200. Jokes, I mean, she kind of had a little slow start to her season, but now she's making back-to-back teams. Jenna Prandini. I mean, I don't think she's going to medal, but, you know. Hey.
We'll see what happens with the Jamaican squad. There's been people who you never thought would medal coming out of USA's going into the 200, or coming out of the Olympic trials going to the 200. And
question: would they put Abby Steiner on the 4x1?
Probably not.
I asked Abby Steiner if she wants to run the 4x4, and she said yes.
4x4 or 4x1?
4x4.
Oh. Why'd you ask about the 4x1?
Because I want to queue up that question first, and then...
Yeah, I mean, listen, she'd be great in both. And can you get the stick around in the 4x1?
Yeah,
that's the only qualification. It's like, you're fast enough. If you made it to the U.S. Championships, you're fast. Can you get the stick around? I don't... It's... Even if you look at the beginning of Allyson Felix's career, she didn't get put on relays early on.
Early on.
It takes a little bit of time.
Yeah.
So they don't...
You have to do vets first.
Yeah, unless you're running... You know, a thing mo
or like running the world lead.
So
200
might even be, well, it's not the two. If it was a 4x2, she's
4x2. Okay. She's on the 4x2 when they have that event. All right.
Men's 5,000.
Move over to the men's 5,000. Again, we're going back and forth between distance and sprints. Keep you guys entertained throughout. I mean, do we want to talk about the surprise or the chalk?
Oh, we're going to start with the winner.
Okay. Start with the winner. So Grant Fisher interviewed him. Post-race, I asked him, did your 10K result when he got outkicked by Joe Klecker influence your strategy in this 5K? He said, absolutely. He was like, yes, I learned that I cannot turn this into a 400-meter race. I need to make this an honest race, which is why Evan Jaeger was assigned to take the lead if the pace slowed down.
Yeah.
Evan Jaeger already on the steeple team. He was using that to help Grant Fisher make it an honest race. Woody Kincaid, in his interview, knew that they were setting up the race for Grant Fisher. And Woody Kincaid knew that this was going to be a race that helps Grant and hurts his chances of winning. So he kind of had to accept that, like, this is going to be a disadvantage for him to win, but he's still going to have, you know, the ability to make a team.
Okay, but let me ask you this, because I always wondered, why did he, that gap formed, and then he kicks in 54. Maybe... Did that play into a strategy of, hey, if they're going out at Grant's pace, people are going to fall off and I can be there to capitalize in the last 400? Is that what he said?
Yeah, he didn't say that specifically, but he was definitely thinking that. I asked him if he had any regrets. He said maybe, he was willing to admit that, like, you know, there could have been a chance that, like, he lets the gap go too far.
Yeah.
But he trusted that he can close. And he said it was actually helpful having two guys ahead of him to, like, chase after. And that might have been a reason why he kind of had an extra second on that final 400.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just interesting dynamic that they knew, Woody knew that the race was going to favor Grant, but he also knew that not everyone can do what Grant does.
Right, exactly.
So therefore he can take advantage of that find a way to make the team. And they go 1-2.
But meanwhile, Hillary Bohr out there rabbiting for his brother, Emmanuel Bohr. So it was like almost a Spider-Man meme. With the two rabbits who come in there, like, hey, wait, okay, now all of a sudden we got two of you. And in a way, they almost worked in tandem.
Yeah.
Bohr did the first stuff, and then the Bowerman guys moved to the front. But Kincaid's kick was otherworldly, 54 or something like that. And Emmanuel Bohr, deal for him.
Yeah.
Just missed the 10,000 team and then, you know, got caught here. And then in the, you know, final stretches and falls back to fifth. But for a while there, it looked like he was going to make it. It was going to be Fisher, Abdihamid Nur, and Emmanuel Bohr. Just didn't quite have enough. I think he ran like 63, 64, something like that for the last lap while Bohr was closing in 54. Nur, though, gets the third spot. And he doesn't win NCAAs. gets on the U.S. team.
Yeah, hell of a season for Abdihamid Nur. Wins NCAA indoors, double. Was dealing with the food poisoning a few days out from NCAAs. He didn't want to disrespect, though, you know, the loss that he had. He said, those are great runners. He says, like, they beat me on that day.
Yeah.
But him being able to end his season with getting top three in a good 5K field, that is, like, speaks more volumes than anything he's done up until this point.
Yeah.
And it definitely shows that he's going to be someone to watch. Not someone to watch. He's going to be someone to be a factor in many 5K trials to come. I think he's going to be really good in the 10K trials. Like, if Abdihamid Nur could do this, Abdihamid Nur could have made the 10K team at Prix.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if he's able to get third here, definitely could have.
Yeah.
So, hell of a season for him. We did ask him, you going pro or are you coming back for one last run in cross country season? He says, I don't know yet. I got to enjoy this. But he said he is thinking about it. He says he does love running for his team. But I do think the contract that he's going to be offered is going to be too hard for him to refuse. As much as he loves NCAA cross country, you love, you know, financial stability a bit better. But his status went from, you know, he was his like contract status after indoors was probably like extremely valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And then NCAA 10K loss, his contract value went down. But now
you're tracking it.
His contract value probably went even more than what it was initially
yeah.
after his 5K top three. So he did a good job at making sure his value is at the best it can be before he signs on the dotted line.
All right. Men's 200. Let's go back to the sprints. Noah Lyles, 1967. Aaron Knight, 1969. Fred Curley, 1983. Kenny Bednarik, 1987. Josephus Lyles, 1993. That's the top five. Four will go because Lyles had to buy, but he wanted to run. He wanted to make a statement. He wanted to silence the doubters is what he said, Gordon. And that last 100, last 80, he was back.
He was so far back.
We were watching that in the stadium, looking at the head-on view, but then I glanced real quick up at the scoreboard. I said, there's a gap here. What's going to happen? But once he started rolling, he was in full-on quintessential Lyles mode of like, whatever I have to do, I'm going to get to the finish line before you. Just barely does, crosses right with Knighton, has the point, which obviously got a lot of attention after the race, but he brought it. He brought it. He didn't need to run the final. Showed up and did it.
Yeah. Of all the people with buys, people were dropping out, but Lyles was the only one who actually put, like, I want to be the dude on his shoulders.
Yeah.
And he, I did not, like, I thought it was over. I was like, Lyles, this
Knighton's, Knighton's curve was real good.
Knighton looked beautiful through the curve. But now that Lyles has this, this has got to be the ultimate, this is like the best thing that has happened to Lyles' entire career, you know, because I think this is more impactful than his title in 2019, because there was this wave, the Arian Knighton wave coming towards him.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was like, oh, sorry, we're on to the next. DeGrasse wins gold in Tokyo. You have Knighton now running 1949. He's doing it at a younger age. He's the next Usain Bolt. Sorry, not Lyles. Your time is up.
Yeah, yeah.
But this was his able to like, hey, guys, my time ain't going nowhere. I'm still here, and I'm able to win when I didn't need to win.
Yeah,
and did something impressive. So I think this is probably a big pivotal race for him, and I think it's going to propel him to run very well 3 weeks from now. And I think Lyles now, unanimous favorite in my mind.
Knighton, I mean, he was bummed about the result, which it's like, man.
Yeah, what do you say in his interview?
Like I said, I don't really remember much of what happened when I was interviewing.
Thinking about your bike?
He was disappointed. He was disappointed because he's like, I want to win. Like, that's just my thing. Like, he's so competitive. He wants to win. It doesn't matter how old he is. I didn't see the NBC on track interview, but apparently just gave like a real quick response and then walked off. Lyles did want to clarify, though, the point. While he pointed at Knighton, wasn't pointing at Knighton. Like, that was just like part of the celebration. It was with the doubters. And he said if there was any confusion, he's going to call Arian, like, clarify that. So I don't know where that leads.
We got point gate going down right now.
I remember 2019 with him and Coleman in Shanghai, right? And the look and all that stuff. And that started a little bit of back and forth. But Knighton wants to win, right? Knighton is not happy to be there. His goal is to, you know, win this race. His goal is to go on and win at the World Championships. But yeah, Lyles was talking up Knighton afterwards for sure. Curley, you know, makes it in the 100 and the 200. That's not hard. That's not easy to do, especially when you have two 200s in the same day. Excuse me. And then Bednarik. Watch out for Bednarik. He's coming on.
Yes.
Now. 1987. He was in lane 9. Gets on the team. But I think he's somebody to watch.
I think Bednarik can medal.
Yeah. Who was, you know, got a later start to the season. Got some low-key Diamond League wins just because they were above 20 seconds. I think he's someone who's really going to benefit from the next 3 weeks. So
I
don't sleep on Bednarik.
I think USA is going to go 1, 2, 3, 4.
And there's a good chance. I guess we could rank what are the events where the U.S. has the best chance to go 1, 2, 3, 4, and this would probably be
the highest. One and only.
I think the high hurdles, there's a shot. It's a longer shot. I mean, all of them are.
Yeah, high hurdles. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's the thing is here, Curley is the only guy who's doubling.
Yeah.
So you got to factor that in as well. But are you going to keep moving here? Women's steeple?
Yes. Right. We'll do women's steeple.
Women's steeple. Coburn, again. 10.
10 titles.
10 titles in the
U.S. Have you ever won anything 10 times?
Nope. Weymouth, Second, 9:12. Courtney Frerichs. Third, 9:16. Frerichs, 100 meters into the race, got stepped on, like her spike, and it ripped. She said she spent the whole rest of the race worried that it was going to fall off. She changed how she jumped off the water barrier because she didn't want water to go into the – she didn't want the spike that had been ripped to land in the water because she didn't want it to fill up with water and, like, go into her foot. So she said it was just tough to, like, stay mentally focused. But credit to Weymouth, was 9:18 at NCAAs and then runs 9:12 here. Like, put herself in it. She was not intimidated at all. I mean, I think most people would be when you have a Frerichs-Coburn battle in the steeple, and to put yourself in it must be feel kind of weird, but not for Weymouth. She handled it well.
Yeah, I mean, Coburn post race talked about the fact that she's able to been doing this 10 times in a row, not in a row, but 10 individual times in the same event. But also we asked her, like, hey, what's it going to take for USA to kind of have a great Worlds? And she said it's going to take sub 9 shape this year.
Yeah,
and it's sure. Not just sub 9 shape, but also sub 9 execution. And, you know, I think two or three of these women can do that. Maybe not Weymouth because she's still so new to it. But, you know, you have to think that on the right conditions, they're focused. We've seen Coburn and Frerichs cross the line 1-2.
That has happened. Yes.
And also cross the line 2-3, right? Then they cross the line 2-3 mm-hmm. as well. So we've seen it before. And it's going to be crazy if they're able to put together another. So it's kind of also wild that Courtney Frerichs has the American record, right?
Yeah.
But Emma Coburn has 10 titles.
Again, and Frerichs, I think someone who's going to – obviously this race I don't think is indicative. Like when your shoe rips apart, that's tough.
Yeah.
And I think another couple weeks we could see her jump up. But, yeah, I mean all three.
Would you rather have 10 U.S. titles or an American record?
My 10 U.S. titles? Yeah. Well, it depends. Bonus money. What am I getting?
Money's not the factor. Money. It's just like legacy. Would you have 10 titles or the American record?
Well, I think the 10 titles. Because eventually the record's going to go. I think most people think that. Maybe even if it's not this generation, somebody's going to break that record. 10 titles. That's dominance.
That's
for
true.
A long period of time. Women's 8?
Let's do it.
Women's 8, men's 8, and the men's 400 hurdles. Thing Mo, 157.16. She led.
She almost lost.
She led from the gun, but then got caught with 50 to go by Ajay Wilson, who ran 157.23. Raven Rogers, the patented kick. It's there every single time. It's incredible at this point how little that has failed her.
Did you have a thing, Mo, needing a lean to win this race?
No, but I asked her afterwards, is it kind of fun to have somebody in the race? And she said, well, it did like show I can compete because it is a different feeling when you're just front running and nobody's there for 800, or maybe you take over with a lap to go or 500 to go and then you're running away the whole time. She said usually she's just running for her life the last hundred because she doesn't know who's there. This time she was there and she had to respond. She had to make a move, which was an interesting position. I didn't think going in that she'd need to do that. You got to give credit to Ajay Wilson for keeping it close. Mo, though, ran about the same time in the semi, which is why I thought we'd see 155. And if she ran 155, she'd be running away from it. So,
do you think she was taking a little bit of her foot off the pedal?
I mean, she didn't say that.
Did you ask?
Were you taking your foot
about
off the
pedal? Or were you thinking about your bike?
There's going to be all sorts of references to my bike throughout this pod. And when it gets clipped, people are going to have no idea.
We need to making like a murder serial type podcast about where the bike is.
Where the bike is.
No, but like it felt like she was not trying to do an all-out effort. It felt like she was trying to just get through the race.
I don't think that's...
That's not true?
No.
How... Okay, there's no way 8 women can all be within a few strides of a Thing Mo with 250 meters left in a race. Like, clearly she was...
that just happened. I just saw that.
I know so that just happened, impossible. But I think a Thing Mo wasn't going for broke, is what I'm trying to say. That we thought she would.
Well...
She did not run the way Sydney ran. Sydney was going for broke. She's like, I'm going to go run to my full capability. I think Mo left things in her tank.
No,
you know, with inflation, the gas prices, she left the gas in it to save it for Worlds.
If she had done that, though, she would have used it the last 100 and would have pulled away. Like, Ajay Wilson caught her with 50 to go. Like, that's not in the plan if you're holding stuff back. If you're holding it back and then... kicking with 100, I could see it, but no, I think
I'm going on record. She was holding back.
We'll never know.
She's not telling anyone.
We have no way of knowing. Men's Cormier hurdles. This race was fast. Ry Benjamin, 47.04. Trevor Bassett, 47.47. Clifford Rosser, 47.65. I mean, Benjamin ran pretty well. That's the world lead?
Yeah.
That is the world lead. Okay. But he had company. It was almost like the training partner's race, Michael Norman, where you're thinking, well, how fast are they going if there's someone right there? It's like, no, just second ran really well as well, too. Bassett ran sensationally. So Benjamin on the team, he's recovering from COVID and tendonitis. So another 3 weeks, we shall see. But we don't know the status of Warholm. We know Dos Santos has been great. But Benjamin, last 100, really showed he's still the top guy.
I asked Ry Benjamin if he thinks he's the favorite or who is the favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that people on the internet don't think it's him. He says the people on the internet think he's washed. And he basically went on this whole little Monday monologue and saying that he reads all of our comments. Oh. Or not your comments. I haven't commented, but
never said Ryan.
He's reading his Instagram feed. He's reading the YouTube feed comments. He's reading Twitter. And apparently people have been, you know, taking a shot at Ry Benjamin.
All right. I don't think that's smart.
Yeah.
I don't think he's washed.
Is there just a big Norway fan base that just has a bunch of troll armies that just go in and you know, meme to death Ry Benjamin after every race?
No,
that'd be kind of cool, right? What if Carson's like the ringleader of the memes?
Dos Santos could be the bigger threat this year if Warholm doesn't have any races going in. But this whole thing is so much different than we thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Heading into 2022. So it's hard to predict what happens next. But yes, I definitely do not think he is watching.
Do you think Trevor Bassett, who just left, he was at Ashland, right?
Yeah.
400 hurdler out of D2, Ashland, unattached. Do you think he's going to get a contract? Do you think someone is going to give him some money after getting second?
How would I possibly know that? Sure. Yes. I hope so.
You probably don't know this because you're thinking about your bike.
No, I don't know this because how do I know anybody's going to get
a contract? Well, just what do you think?
I think 47-47, he's going to make
it. It's worth it?
He's going to make the final if he runs like that at World Championships. So can someone make a World Championship final and not get sponsored? I would think he'd have a really good
shot. That can happen.
Yeah, I know. I know it can happen. I'm saying, never mind.
Sorry.
Moving on.
Am I annoying you?
No, it was a dumb question followed by a dumb follow-up.
Have we done too many podcasts this close to each other? No. We're used to being screen apart and you can't. This is
no, I just let's move on to men's
800. You're just worried about your bike.
No, I'm not here to talk about my bike.
All right, men's 800. This was an exciting race. I think Hoppe making the team was kind of, you know, expected him winning it. It's kind of like, okay, we got that. But I think the dive between Brandon Miller and Clayton Murphy's lean was kind of one of the moments of the meet.
Sure.
And it kind of reminded me of when a former Texas A&M athlete did that dive in SECs.
Infinite Tucker.
Yeah, Infinite Tucker. But Brandon Miller, he dove at the line. Clayton Murphy was leaning as well. And then there was like a 10-second wait to find out who got that third spot. And Miller's name came up first, beat him by 0.04. Miller was thrilled. He says he's kind of been going through a lot of adversity, which means, you know, he mentioned like just he hasn't had like perfect races every time.
Yeah.
You know, he wins indoors, doesn't win outdoors, but is able to, you know, beat a very good Clayton Murphy, who I thought had a potential to medal at Worlds. So I'm kind of surprised that Murphy is the odd man out here. What are your thoughts on this team, Hoppe, Koech, and Miller?
Yeah, Koech needed the standard and got it. So I'm just fascinated at what his potential is going to be. Hoppe seemed to almost be floating above it all. There was all this chaos in the last 100 and who's going to get what spot, highlighted by Miller's dive. Miller's intriguing. Front runs, goes through 451.6 and hangs on there with the dive. I think Mass Hoppe afterwards, you know, thinking of gold, which is obviously not a very good question, but he said, yeah.
Well, if he said no?
I mean, then that would have been probably more of a story than him saying yes. My point was, this is wide open, right? If those are David Rudisha figure out there right now, I wouldn't even ask the question.
Correct.
So the fact that the question is being asked just goes to show that, hey, this thing is pretty open. And this was his season's best, 144.6. He hasn't been exactly, you know, running insane times. He also said he wants to go over and run in a Diamond League before Worlds. He wants to go to Stockholm just because he likes to race, which makes me think his slower times this year are a product of, one, just the types of races he's been in and just the lack of racing. Remember in 2019 how much that guy ran?
Well, he ran like all time. His T-first page was like...
And he had that win streak because he won every prelim. He refused, even when it didn't matter, he refused to lose a prelim. So he would always put himself in the front of the race towards the end. So he's somebody... I don't know what those 800 odds are going to look like, but Bryce Hoppe winning gold would not surprise me at all.
Yeah. Jonah Koek.
Great story.
Who had him on any 800-meter team?
Yeah.
I was talking to his coach after the race.
Yeah.
He said he was trying to get him to run the 5K. Yeah.
This year or at this meet?
This year. Like, not this meet, but like going training into the year. And he's like, no. And now he's like, well, I guess he was right because he just made the team in the 800. So he's like, oh, maybe I'll get him to do at least the 1500 next.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but like no one, I mean, I remember Jonah Koek from, you know, early UTEP days.
Yeah.
He wasn't really that big of a factor at the NCAA level. Like he would make finals, but he wasn't like the other two UTEP guys and Cerruni and Career.
Yeah.
He was kind of like the odd man, like, oh, I'm the miler of the group. But for him, you know, he joins WCAP, he got changes in training, and now he's, you know, peaking at the right time. I think it's kind of incredible. Like, no one had Koek top three. Mm-hmm. Even in the chaos of an 800, I think it's kind of, it's always interesting when you just see like, whoa, didn't see that coming.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. So,
field event stuff, Chase Ely, 2051, another PR. That's a world lead in the women's shot put. Men's javelin, I don't know. How many of those guys? Ethan Dabbs. No one has a standard, though, down to Shuey, right? That was the one where only one guy had the standard.
Yep, yep, yep.
That Ethan Dabbs wins it. Men's high jump, Shelby McEwen won. He has the standard. Matched his personal best. Javon Harrison got second. And then triple jump, Donald Scott. First, Will Clay second. Chris Bernard third. Let's see. What other? Was there another field event? I think that was it.
Okay, Kevin.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on Sha'Carri Richardson's statement that she made to the media saying that the media has been disrespecting the athletes, filming her without their permission and trying to just make a buck?
She said filming without the permission?
I don't know. Maybe she didn't say that word, but like just filming without, like not, she's saying like we don't know what they're going through, win or lose, and you just film us and without, before you even ask us a question. You know, and said we are disrespecting the athletes.
The athletes as a whole?
Yeah. Yes, she said athletes. Stop disrespecting the athletes.
So the way, people may not know this, but the way the media is set up at most track meets is the media area is directly adjacent to the track. And athletes come directly off the track into the media area.
And they're required. They have to walk.
That's how they get back to where their gear
and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, sometimes people take a lot longer out there, right? They collect them stuff. But as if you've seen any track meet, you know, sometimes they like really usher them off the track. And then the next person says, go this way, go this way, go this way. When people win and make teams and stuff, it takes longer because they do the victory lap. They do the on camera interview and things like that. But oftentimes you're getting them right after. I think that's the ideal way to interview an athlete after a sporting event? No, but in all the time that we've been doing this, that's the one way that they've presented it to us, right? And that's the only availability that is there. So, you know, if people want to change that, so that way there's more of a time to collect their thoughts, like I would be all for that. The thing, other thing I should mention though is, you know, this meet and pretty much like every other meet I've covered in the past, about 90%, 95% of the athletes are willing to talk. They want to talk. They want to share their stories, even if things didn't go well.
Yeah, Paul Chelimo, didn't make the team, got 11th, and he was like, they have a 3-minute interview talking about this season.
And if you don't, that's fine. Just say, hey, I don't want to talk right now, and then totally understood. Like I've always said, there's so many athletes and so many stories. If someone doesn't want to share their story or share their experience, that's perfectly within their right. I know some people are saying like they should be required to talk and they should be fine. You know, I mean, no, if you need to go that far, if they don't want to talk, then that's fine. But the media that comes there is there to ask questions. It's there to figure out the story. I also will say, like, in general, track media, from what I've observed, is usually a lot more deferential than other media that I've seen in other sports, U.S. especially. Like, when I was at the World Championships in 2019, there were some outlets from overseas where, you know, it was a lot more aggressive in terms of what they were asking and how they were asking it. So, yeah, I think most, I mean, I don't want to speak for all the athletes, but all I can say is most athletes, you know, when you ask them, hey, do you have a comment or do you want to talk? They say yes. But if people want to change the process, that's fine. But for us in the media, this is the opportunity that, you know, this is the availability we have with the athletes. And it's a professional sport. And, you know, you talk about visibility and stuff. That's one of the main ways to get it. So that's just kind of my perspective on the whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, she was given an opportunity to talk. She chose not to talk three times in a row. Then at the very end, she changed her mind, made a statement saying we're disrespecting the athletes. Kindly disagree with that sentiment, but you know, everyone's allowed to have an opinion. And hey, that was the whole point. You got to say what you want to say, unedited, and people get to hear it. And
yeah.
The world can react however they want. And that's it.
So. Yeah. I mean, what's the alternative? Just like nobody speaks at all after races, or is there there's going to be a press conference at the end?
The alternative, I mean, I think a lot of people want is I only want to be interviewed on my good moments and not my bad moments.
Yeah.
I think that's what they want. I don't think,
which is a human reaction.
It's a human. You just lose the Super Bowl. The coach doesn't want to do a press conference after losing the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Cause that's like the worst time, like being told all the times they screwed up the play calls. Like you don't want to do that interview.
Yeah.
But after you win a Super Bowl, you want to talk to everyone and give them all your time. And I get that's human. You don't like, it's not fun to answer questions after a loss, you know? And the thing is, there are certain athletes who lose who don't have to answer questions. And the reason why is because no one is like expecting them to win.
The
interest level. When you are a favorite, when you are the star of a meet, people want to hear from you when you're dominating, and people want to hear from you when you get upset.
Yeah.
And that's sports. It's called sports.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I just think there seems to be a disconnect too. Just, this is a larger conversation. We don't need to go into it, but just between like how people define media now versus how they define media 10, 15, 20 years ago. And I think that has a big role in responses like that to what's going on. But yeah, I just, again, I can only speak from my like experience. I mean, yours is probably pretty similar. Sure. There's some people who don't want to talk, but if you just assume nobody wants to talk, which I've made this mistake too. Oh man, this person doesn't want to talk because they had a bad race. And then they do want to talk. And then they're happy that their story was shared out there.
Yeah,
they're
like
happy.
Gabby Thomas.
Yeah.
She was one of the favorites. She's just won an Olympic medal and now she didn't make any team. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
That's a bad day for her, but she's talking.
Yeah. So I just think, again, I don't blame anybody who doesn't want to talk. If you don't want to talk, that's totally within your right. You know, that's between you and like your sponsors and all the people who pay you or manage your career. But
does the media have the right to announce that they don't want to talk?
Does the media have the right to announce they don't want to talk? What do you mean? Oh, to say this person didn't talk?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's been going on for a while. I remember back in 2012, there was people who didn't want to talk and people would say, yeah, they're not talking. I just, to my point earlier, I'm just saying, if you assume nobody ever wants to talk, then you, number one, stories are not going to get told in the sport. Number two, and also you're kind of taking some agency away from those athletes who do want to share their stories, right? It's like, I'm just going to assume that this person has nothing to say because they're upset. I mean, the most memorable interviews, I feel like, especially from Olympic trials and USAs, end up being the one, you know, on the razor's edge, the people who just get in or the people who just miss it. And I think those interviews, if athletes are trying to get more fans and more interest, like people become fans because they see athletes sometimes in their vulnerable moments. And they're like, man, like that was incredible. Like you went through this. Cause then they're bought in, right? Then they are really invested in that athlete's success of, okay, man, we saw them in this moment. Now we're seeing them later on. And they're thriving, but you can't like tell that story without trying to talk. And
I will say this, Sha'Carri didn't want to talk to us at all throughout the entire meet.
Not just us, the whole media.
And the whole media.
It wasn't about us.
Yeah, it was about the whole media. It's not going to change my opinion of her. I still think she's one of the best runners in the world, and I still will pick her to make teams in future years, if not win races. So
Yeah.
And I think she's going to run fast this summer. I think she's probably going to go out there, run a 10.8 or 10.7 at one of the Diamond Leagues and get people talking. But
All right, checking in the chat here.
Chat's going wild.
Is this live?
Yeah, we're live.
I mean, not the show, but I'm saying that this isn't like repopulating.
Because... chat's like 5 seconds delayed.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm looking at the chat here. We'll see if there's anything there. It's It's going so fast. Ray says, Carl Lewis will always break down his performance for the media, win or lose. What is going on? Oh, come on. I don't want to talk about that. No, just kidding.
Last stuff. I don't think there's much. Gordon, puffing. What? No, come on. No. I should read it before I say it.
Yeah, yeah. You can't be like, I'm going to start a sentence where someone
says Gordon. I see my name and I'm like, oh, what? It's gone.
Wait, is this okay? 400 results from. Is this Jamaica? Candace McLeod first, 50-29. McPherson second, 50-49. Cherokee Young, 50-63. Stacey Williams fourth.
Yeah, it's.
Freddie says, react to Knight and Laz NBC interview. We didn't see it because we were in there. I haven't seen the clip yet. I read it. Someone had a transcript of it, which I read. And then, which I know when you read it, you can't actually. Get all the body language. All I'm saying is in the mix zone, we asked Lyles about the gesture. He said, pointing at him across the line, he said, that was not directed at Arian specifically. That was to the doubters or the people who didn't think he could do it. That's what he said. So thoughts on Marcel Jacobs. What did he?
He ran like ass in Italy. He ran 10-17, then 10-12.
Okay.
Well, he didn't need to run fast because it is the Italian championships. He's going to run Stockholm. That would be more of us understand if he's a legitimate medal contender. I get it. He won global gold. He won the Olympic title. But Fred Curley right now is the best sprinter in the world.
100-meter sprinter.
I say sprinter.
Well, if you combine the two?
Yeah.
Okay. But they're not running the combo one and two at the
No, world but like if I had to pick the best sprinter in the world, One would be Curley. Two would be Lyles. And then three would be Rommel or Knighton.
Yeah. So Knighton said job isn't finished and then walked off. I mean, he's a competitor. It's exciting. Like,
it's interesting how Lyles is very like loud and like out there. Like, yeah, he was like asking us to request the time he would run in the final.
Yeah.
After the semis. And Knighton is more like serious and just like focused. So they kind of play off each other of like, you know.
He said.
The wild and the stone-faced.
He said, he's like, Knighton kind of had the target on his back because of the 1949. And it was just like, that's a different experience. Like running when you have that versus running as an underdog is totally different. There was a comment here. Yeah, I mean, how many people doubted Lyles? I said he should be number two. I mean, I think I picked him, but said he was number two behind Knighton. So I guess you could put me in that, you know, guilty as charged, but I wasn't like, there's no way Noah Lyles will ever win another 200.
And you go through here and I'm going to update our picks.
Go through what? I can't see it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You react to some of the comments and we're going to do our picks and then we'll close out the pod.
Yeah. Yeah. So DeMarcus says Lyles had a bye. Yeah. He didn't need to run. Right, he wanted to run so he could win, so he could say, I am the U.S. champion in the 200. You're all talking about Knighton's 1949. But Knighton isn't, not just in the future, obviously his future is very bright, but Knighton isn't done even this year. It would not surprise me if he's able to turn the tables at World Championships. This was a close race. DC Knoll says, I love how pissed Knighton was, loved it. Love how Lyles was the guy who said, screw the bye. Loved it. I love that our other two guys in 200 can also medal. Whole thing is great. Yeah. I mean, if you're looking at it from a broad perspective of just the sport in general and that event and an event to get really excited about, you know, the men's 200 is at the top of the list. No Coleman for the 200. No, he scratched. He didn't run the semis. So he didn't run at all today. Omanyal is going to be a problem too. Yeah, so he ran over the weekend. Who will make the women's 4x4? Steiner, McLaughlin, Moe. I think it's going to be McLaughlin and Moe, and then whoever. Muhammad, if she runs amazing in the 400 hurdles, or Britton Wilson, if she runs amazing in 400 hurdles, could take up a spot. And then I think you got it. You have to have at least one open 400-meter runner. I mean, I know you don't have to. They can choose whoever they want, but I think one of those women is going to impress enough at World Championships, and you're going to want to put them in the relay. why did he scratch the 200? I mean, he said he scratched the 100 because of coach's decision. So I'm assuming it's the same thing. But I didn't ask him because he was still making the decision yesterday. So was it known that Hocker wasn't running the 5K? I thought he was going to be there. I mean, what I heard is Hocker missed 2 weeks of training heading into the meet. Did you hear the same thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think he knew he just didn't have it. Also, that would have been a tough race for Hocker, like that fast from the gun. Like, he would have much preferred something tactical, but he will not be at the World Championships, which I think is a pretty big surprise. Gordon's clicking over. He's putting things in here for Colt to put up. Oh, these are picks? Who won?
I don't know. We got to count.
Okay. Let's do this. I had a great rhythm with the chat here.
There you go. We got back chat. We got chat.
All right, chat. I'm back. What's Knight and Run for the 100? He's got a crazy start. He hasn't broken 10 yet, which I think he should be able to do that. And when he gets the opportunity, I think he will. Yeah, Cooper scratching the 5,000 didn't surprise me. He made it in the 1,500. I think Steiner continues to focus on the 1 and the 2 or moves up to the open 4. 1 and 2. I don't think she's going to move up. She's made the team from the 200. I think she's good. Everybody wants to move up like instantly. Put on a 4x4, that could be fascinating. But again, to be a rookie in the beginning part of your career and get put on one of those Team USA relay teams is tough. It happens, but I think they're going to err on the side of experience unless she takes that decision out of their hands.
All right.
Pick for the U.S. men's 4x1. I think we talked about that a little bit yesterday. We'll talk more about that throughout the week. Robert brings up Josephus Slatters. My sleeper almost made it. And Noah was bummed in the interview that his brother wasn't able to make it. He was right there.
Well, I sent in the wrong graphic. I'm going to send one more to you. But we're going to go through and one more graphic, and then we'll end this. We have the official results of predicting who would win top 3 in every event. Colt, do you have it? Can we put it up?
All right. So what do we just, who has the most green? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah. No, it's who has. So green means you correctly predicted the position of that athlete. Yellow means they didn't finish in that spot, but they did finish top 3. And red means that they just didn't make the team.
Yeah.
And you correctly predicted top 3 people, 36. I had 34. So Kevin,
winner,
you won. I will say though, a couple of these things did not go my way. Like Cooper Tier, I didn't know he was going to scratch. Isaac Updike was a scratch. So I had a couple scratches that kind of screwed me up. Coleman, we both had a scratch there.
Yeah.
So scratches screwed us up a bit, but you were the more intelligent predictor of the two of us. So congratulations, Kevin.
So this is interesting. How many winners I got? On the women's side, Diggs, McLaughlin, Moe, and Coburn. So I'm about 50% there, or just under 50%. And on the men's side, I only missed 3.
Yeah, we both did well on the men.
Holloway one is tough. I guess it wasn't that hard. Is Ry Benjamin going to win? Yes. Yeah, I went with Knight. I went with Lyles. So my second and third guessing myself paid off. Our most incorrect predictions were in third, which makes sense.
Yeah. Because
of the people that you are least short about
you. None of us had an event where we missed all 3.
Oh, that's,
we got at least one person right
in
every event, so that's good.
Well done. All right, any other comments here in the chat? Otherwise we're gonna wrap up. How about start of the meet, Steiner, Curley, or is it Sydney? It's Sydney.
Yeah, it's Sydney. I would say Sydney, woman, and Fred Curley. Yeah,
let me look back at this. Hold on.
What are we looking at?
Well, I just wanted to get it refreshed on winners.
Yeah, Sydney.
Well, Sydney, no, I know for Sydney, but if we're going women and men. Norman?
No. Curley was more impressive than Norman.
Lyles?
No. Curley ran 9.7 twice in the same day.
Hillary Bohr.
I'll give you that.
Can I interest you in Woody Kincaid? He got second.
I'll trade you one Woody Kincaid for 3.
Man, that kick was impressive.
All right, let's end the pod. Guys, thanks for listening. We love you for tuning in every day. Next pod is going to be on Tuesday. We're going to do 2 pods next week, Tuesday, and then a pod after Stockholm Diamond League on Thursday.
Subscribers pod, we're going to get some point this week.
Yes. So apologies. We did not do our subscriber pod during the week. We miscalculated our schedules.
No, we didn't miscalculate the schedule. They moved it
up. Yes,
we're going to do it in the morning today. They moved it up so by an hour because the heat.
And I was not waking up early.
No, that's not why. We had a big block of time.
Yes.
Or not.
We're going to do it. We have our topics.
Producer Colt is there. So, yeah, we'll do it. We did not forget.
Maybe we'll do it, and then we'll post it on Wednesday. That's what we'll do.
Okay.
So we're gonna record that one on Tuesday, post it on Wednesday. So pods on Tuesday, Thursday, and then members only pod on Wednesday. Check it out. It's going to be great.
Yeah, be a member.
Become a member.
What's it called?
You join.
Join, not click, subscribe.
Yeah, you join. But subscribe too. Subscribe, join, do the whole thing. Check out all the interviews on our YouTube channel, also on our website. We don't put every interview on the YouTube, so go check out the website. They're all there free. Check them all out.
Yeah, thanks everybody for tuning in. Appreciate everybody watching along with us the last couple of days. It's been fun. We're going to do it again at the World Championships. So have a great rest of your Sunday, and we'll talk to you early next week.
Bye.